Hello, Film Weekly fans, a near comatose Jason Solomons here, pepped up by the Guardians coffee machine. The 82nd Academy Awards has just rounded off. I've been up through the night, as most of you UK listeners were snoring in bed. We here have been patching the Oscars ceremony into the collective Guardian and Observer consciousness to assemble the finest moments for you. So, welcome to the Film Weekly Oscar Highlights Special.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am pleased to introduce actor, writer, musician, Grammy and Emmy winner, one of the most enduring entertainers of all time, Mr. Steve Martin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. And this is Alec Baldwin.
Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin, the hosts of the awards there. They kickstarted a roller coaster of an evening. The glamour and the glitz and the awards, of course, will form part of our discussions tonight. And to that end, I'm joined by Zan Brooks, who's just come off a night of sweat and toil at the Coalface live blogging. Zan, how are your hands? How is your brain?
My brain has gone to porridge. And thankfully, I'm not invited to any of the Oscar parties, which means I can go home and sleep.
Yes, the Vanity Fair would not let you in, looking in your fried state. But it was a good night out there on the wires, on the blog.
I think it was. I think it was a pretty good ceremony. It was maybe a bit sedate. Maybe we kind of knew where a lot of the big awards were going beforehand, which took away some of the tension. But at the same time, I think we came into the contest knowing that it was basically a David and Goliath standoff between Avatar and the Hurt Locker.
Yeah, let's
and
look so at that. That
the
main
suspense
fight.
Was where that was, and that came right at the end of the evening.
So we ended up in the end with Hurt Locker 6, Avatar 3. And there, a bit of history being made, of course, Catherine Bigelow winning Best Director, the first woman to do so.
Yeah.
And she took Best Picture as well. Let's have a listen to Catherine Bigelow as she marched up to that podium.
And the winner is... Well, the time has come. Catherine Bigelow!
My fellow nominees, such powerful filmmakers who have inspired me and I have admired for some of whom for decades. And thank you to every member of the Academy. This is, again, the moment of a lifetime. I would not be standing here if it wasn't for Mark Boal, who risked his life for the words on the page.
Is this correct? Is this right? Is this fit and proper?
I think it is. You know, you could maybe say to give a woman the best directing thing is maybe a sort of sentimental thing and it's well overdue. And when Barbara Streisand showed up to present the best director award, you kind of thought, well, probably this is going to go to Bigelow. It's a bit stage managed. But I think she utterly deserves it. I think it was a superbly directed film. And I'm very glad that the Academy didn't fudge it and didn't split those two big awards. I think that Bigelow deserved it. And I think the film as a whole deserved the Best Picture Oscar.
We mentioned in our preview show that I always thought Avatar was going to win Best Picture here when the nominations came out. It's been a couple of weeks, I would have a month or so of campaigning or whatever, the shifting sands. It did look like Hurt Locker was always going to do it. I still went with Avatar in the end. I still thought they might reward the big budget because Hurt Locker is the least successful in terms of box office Best Picture ever in the history. Yeah, because it came out ages ago. People saw it at Venice in 2008. No one came out of Venice saying, I've just seen a Best Picture winner then. The film sort of has gained momentum, which I think is testament to its kind of sober, reflective nature as well as its action. I think it's a timeless piece in a way.
Who knows? There are probably books to be written about how you position a film for Oscar. And it's very interesting when you follow this process down 10 months or so. You know, this time back in September, we probably had a very, very different idea of what the big contenders were for the Oscars. Then some drop away. Films like The Lovely Bones and Bright Star, which people are talking up, disappear. Other films gain momentum, like The Hurt Locker, like Inglourious Basterds, which played back in Cannes last year and was seen as a bit of a disaster, and then comes in with 8 nominations at the Oscars. So it's a very strange voodoo science that's going on, and I'm not sure how much of that is behind the scenes moving and shaking, and how much of it is just the sort of the organic thing of films finding an audience.
But The Hurt Locker, I think, is a very fine picture, indeed, and she's a very fine director.
It's a brilliant picture.
She was a great guest on our In the Director's Chair, so do check that out. So it's sort of a really fascinating interview and insight into her art and her kind of semiotic codes and her kind of structuralism as well. She's a very intelligent woman, and I think a thoroughly brilliant person to be the first woman to have won. Let's hope that ceiling's broken now and she can just get on with it, and she can just be a filmmaker now rather than a female filmmaker.
No, she's always gonna be carrying the mantle now until the day she dies. But it's not such a bad mantle to carry if you're gonna have something on your tombstone. First woman to win Best Director is what you want if you're a woman.
Catherine Bigelow was, of course, a glamorous as well as a skillful presence on the night, and glamour is a big part of the Oscars, with the red carpet and the parade of couture as the hopefuls make their way into the Kodak Theatre.
Actually, I have a watch bracelet on my bijou, which I never wear.
Gorgeous.
Because I don't really care what time it is.
What time is it?
It's irrelevant to me. I'm on Mariah time.
Have a lovely evening.
Mariah Carey there, very much on Mariah time, on Planet Mariah. And joining me to tell me about the standard of this year's red carpet is fashion and style writer Rachel Dixon. Are your eyes twinkling with glamour?
They are absolutely chock-a-block with glamour. I've been quite impressed tonight, actually, surprisingly impressed. There's been some really great dresses on the red carpet. The standard is quite high.
So what you're saying is there are no real disasters this year, or you're actually saying that people have actually made an effort, which they normally do. It's the Oscars, you would make an effort, wouldn't you? But they've made an effort, and they've actually kind of, the designers have actually kind of gone for a theme this year, or everyone's just kind of been on good classic red carpet form?
A bit of a mixture, really. Most of the big names have scrubbed up really well. A few themes emerging, quite a lot of gold dresses on the red carpet, a few nude dresses, quite a lot of floral sort of decoration appearing.
Everyone said that before it started, it was going to be a McQueen year, obviously sort of homage to Alexander McQueen. Has it panned out that way? It didn't look too McQueenish.
We've not really seen that, to be honest, no. McQueen's a bit sort of edgy, I think, for Oscars. People tend to play it a little bit safer.
There were some at the BAFTAs, which I thought was his London home, and it was a bit fresh that would happen.
Yes,
who was dominating at the Oscars?
Lots of Giorgio Armani, lots of Chanel, Valentino, all the classic big
old
names.
People's clothes, aren't they? It's a bit fusty and fuddy-duddy, but it didn't look it when I was watching it. But to know that these are the names behind them, I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, it is surprising because, say, one of the more quirky dresses was worn by Carey Mulligan. She looked great, but the dress was by Prada, so, you know, quite a classic big name designer, but it was a really edgy dress.
What was it?
It was a black strapless dress, but the bodice was decorated with tiny little metal keys and pairs of scissors. So it's quite unusual.
Now,
quirky.
Anna Wintour famously told her before this that she should go short at the Oscars. Has she ignored the Ice Queen's Nuclear Winter's advice?
It wasn't floor length. It was shorter at the front and showed off some nice sort of black sandals. So she's taken the advice to a certain extent.
To the knee, if not to heart. Yeah. Big dangly earrings as well, which I thought looked really nice on her little blonde bob.
Yes, that was lovely. The big dangly earrings contrasting
massive,
with her nice short hair.
Massive moment for Carey Mulligan. Obviously, in acting terms, a huge sort of almost her debut film to get an Oscar nomination. But in style terms, because she's been kind of lauded as this kind of elfin queen, the new kind of Audrey Hepburn. So all this pressure, all these red carpets, there's a huge responsibility to her to kind of look good and kind of actually become a style icon as well. Well, really, she's just an actress. She should get on with doing the acting. It's hard.
Well, she seems to be taking it all in her stride, and you know, I don't think it's too difficult because designers will be falling over themselves to dress her. So she just has to take her pick, really.
Right, a big tick for Carey Mulligan. Well done, Carey. Who else impressed you?
Diane Kruger looked great. I don't know if it's because she started her career as a model, but she's very fashion. She's always wearing cutting-edge dresses, sometimes a bit too much for me. At the Golden Globes, she was wearing a big frilly frou-frou pink number, which I gave the thumbs down to. But tonight she was in Chanel off-white with lots of ruffles, black lace, and she looked fantastic.
Right, she's the only woman really in Inglourious Basterds as well, so she kind of was representing for the entire film. Do you think she brings a little European glamour? Things so you mentioned Kerry Mulligan, you mentioned Diane Kruger there. Do these European women bring a slightly different kind of sensibility to the Oscars?
Yes, I think they do, and I think they are often leading the way. Absolutely.
Who else? Who is there? An American woman that has kind of actually seized the moment, domestic moment, and gone and looking really good.
One American who didn't get it right for me was J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez. She was in Armani, and she was allegedly wearing a futuristic fabric, but to me it looked a little bit like bubble wrap. She was encased in this sort of very sculpted white contoured dress, emphasising the curves, but didn't quite work for me.
Oh, yes, for J-Lo, I came over and looked at your screen and saw those contours, and I thought, well, no, your screen's in the wrong ratio, you need to kind of adjust it. But no, it was just J-Lo's natural curves emphasised by the bubble wrap. You wanted to go up and pop her a little bit, one by one. That would have been fun.
You did, and I don't think that's quite the effect she was after.
Probably not.
Apparently the dress was inspired by the romance and mystery of the moon, but that didn't quite come across.
When you fashion writers, you always seem to know who the dress is by. Is there a label that trailing out the back or something? How do you always know this?
Well, I'd like to claim that it's just our expert eye. We can size it up at a glance. But actually, often the designers like to let you know as soon as possible who's wearing their dresses, because it's a kudos for them.
Big kudos. Sarah Jessica Parker, I saw. She looked a bit like an Oscar herself.
Well, she did. And she's taken a bit of stick for the dress she was wearing. It was, it was Couture.
Chanel Couture.
I think
Couture.
It was Chanel Couture.
Very, very
yes.
Excited she was. She said it had been on the Paris catwalk about 2 weeks ago and it was still fresh or hot or unlaundered.
Oh, yes. I think she said Mr. Lagerfeld made it specially for tonight. Yeah. She was keen to tell everyone that.
You would tell. If Mr. Lagerfeld had made you a dress, you'd say he made it for me.
I would be telling the world. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I thought she looked really good in it. It's a very simple sort of gold sheath dress. With then some ornamentation at the top.
We often forget on Oscar night that the men are there too and looking nice. Any man busting a good tuxedo look?
Well, I think we can be forgiven for forgetting the men because they are basically very boring.
They're just walkers, aren't they?
They are. They're just there in their tuxes. You know, everyone's in black. The most exciting you get is someone's wearing some shades, perhaps.
That'd be Jack Nicholson.
Yes. And it was largely the same old story this year, but there was one man that caught my eye. That was Samuel L. Jackson.
Ah.
And, he was wearing Armani, but he'd gone for a bit of a twist. So his tux wasn't black, it was blue, and it was made from velvet and satin, and he had a matching beret and also some little round glasses that just topped the look off nicely. He was the best man for me.
He can get away with it, you see. Robert Pattinson couldn't come up and wear that. You see, you get thrown off the red carpet, but he can. And nice to see at the Oscars that everyone did, apart from Samuel, kind of observe the black tie, because the BAFTAs, some people look like right scruffs. I remember Mackenzie Crook and Nick Frost. They were turning up to some, you know, wedding at a church hall.
At the BAFTAs, some people just turned up in anything, yeah.
What are you wearing tonight?
That would be telling.
Oh, it's a little Primark number. It looks great. Where can we see all these images we've been talking about if people want to kind of see the outfits we've been talking about?
If you go to guardian.co.uk/fashion, then you'll see all the hits and misses from Oscar night.
It's Oscar night with Jason Solomons. It's not just film, you know, there's fashion too. Zan, I feel dowdy in comparison to all that red carpet glamour. But we were watching the ceremony here in London. Let's not pull the wool over people's eyes. What sort of ceremony was it? Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin as hosts, first of all.
Well, they set the bar very low, didn't they? Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin, because a few months ago, if you remember, we both went to see a film called It's Complicated, which they were in, which I think I particularly hated and you mildly disliked. But here, I thought that they were very, very good. Steve Martin, of course, has done this a couple of times before.
Yeah, I always thought he was quite a congenial host.
He's
I liked
very
him.
Good. He strikes the right balance between, I guess he is Hollywood's insider and therefore can make fun of them without people taking offence. So it was actually very, very irreverent, his routine, and yet there was a warmth to it as well, and I think it struck the right note.
They did the normal thing. They come on and they kind of point out people in the room and they get a round of applause, and that sort of went down quite well, and they sort of included everyone in, and George Clooney and them had a little silent banter, and I thought it was going okay. There was this song and dance number that kicked things off.
There's always a song and dance
which
number.
Which was dreadful.
And it's always dreadful. It's always dreadful. They always have weird things. They had a thing where the nominees were all lined up on stage at the start, and then eventually people came up and claimed them, and it was like some weird blind date where they were standing there smiling rather nervously and ingratiatingly and then were picked off by people who led them away. And I thought, this is some awful sort of dating game that's going on. There was a terrible extended song and dance routine that seemed to pay very tangential tribute to each of the nominated films.
No one could hear it.
No one could hear it, and I couldn't work out which film they were honouring with. You know, each one they seemed to honour by turning some backflips and jumping up and down. And, you know, you think, is this up? Is this a serious man? There was no way of knowing.
I would have liked to have seen an interpretive dance for Inglourious Basterds. That would have been brilliant.
That would have been a lot of goose stepping.
that would have been funny. Right? We're not directing the show. Did you have a favourite moment from the show? Obviously, the stars come out at the Oscars, and you've got the acting categories, which I suppose they made quite a lot of the acting categories. They kind of give each actor and actress a huge introduction. Right? They had a sort of fawning presentation to them by a person
they
who'd
did,
worked
didn't
with
they?
Them. Like Forrest Whitaker came on to kind of tribute Sandra Bullock and said, oh, I had the pleasure of directing her in Hope Floats. And I thought, God, I'd forgotten that movie. I've always liked you, Forrest Whitaker, because you reminded me that you made Hope Floats. Now I hate both of you.
And he did it in this sort of hushed, reverent thing of like somebody worshipping at the feet of Jesus.
She may not have been the Messiah, Zan, but she did win the Best Actress. Is that deserved?
No, in my opinion, it's not. I didn't like The Blind Side. I thought that Carey Mulligan probably should have won for An Education. Having said all that, I thought Sandra Bullock's speech was actually very good, and she won me over with that.
That was her best performance.
It was her best performance.
Well, let's hear her being very nice.
Did I really earn this, or did I just wear y'all down? I would like to thank the Academy for allowing me in the last month to have the most incredible ride with rooms full of artists that I see tonight and that I've worked with before and I hope to work with in the future, who inspire me and blaze trails for us, four of them that I've fallen deeply in love with, I share this night with and I share this award with. Gabby, I love you so much. You are exquisite. You are beyond words to me. Carrie, your grace and your elegance and your beauty and your talent.
I think Sandra Bullock was very lucky this year. It was a sort of weak year where there was two unknowns and she sort of came in with the favourite. She's never going to win one of these again, is she? Or is she going to get loads more new roles? Because the actresses in the past have actually sort of failed off. Halle Berry's never been back to where she was before.
This is true, the curse of Catwoman. The weird thing about Sandra Bullock is that she's almost maybe got that out of the way already, because
all about
on Saturday
Steve.
Night, she won the this year's Golden Raspberry Award for All About Steve.
Yes.
So really, it's been a weekend of triumph and disaster.
Is that the first? Someone winning the Razzie on the Saturday and then the Oscar?
I think it must
be.
Yes, mustn't it?
Must be.
But very gamely.
For different films. I can
for
see
different
it for
films,
same
but
films.
Actually, you could flip those films and it wouldn't make any difference at all. But again, to her credit, she actually showed up at the Golden Raspberries and collected the award.
See, that's why we like Sandra Bullock. That's why Hollywood likes Sandra Bullock. They also like Jeff Bridges, the dude who not only abides, but he won the Best Actor for Crazy Heart, and he was very excited to do so.
Woo! Thank you, Mom and Dad, for turning me on to such a groovy profession. Oh, my dad and my mom, they love showbiz so much. I remember my mom getting all of his kids to entertain at her parties. You know, my dad sitting me on his bed and teach me all of the basics of acting for a role in Sea Hunt. They love showbiz so much. And I feel an extension of them. You know, this is honoring them as much as it is me.
Wow, whooping Jeff Bridges. I kind of liked him a bit less after his acceptance speech. He's your mate.
Yeah, he's. I interviewed him a while ago. I'm very happy that he won this. I can't quite shake the suspicion that it's a Lifetime Achievement Award in all but name. I think I really enjoyed Crazy Heart and I thought he was great in it, but he has given better performances. But he was first nominated back in 1971. He's been nominated four times previously. It's about time they gave it to him because he is one of the great Hollywood character actors.
Yeah, no, I was very pleased for him. I just sort of feel slightly sorry for Colin Firth because I do think he's terrific in A Single Man and probably won't get another part to be so terrific again. But I think he's been terribly stoic and British and kind of enjoyed the ride so far. Quick look at the supporting actors and actresses. Christoph Waltz, no surprise there, for Hans Lander in Inglourious Bastard, and Monique for Precious, of course, who I thought gave a really interesting acceptance speech.
First, I would like to thank the Academy for showing that it can be about the performance and not the politics.
Almost a frisson of controversy at these rather safe Oscars.
So what is she saying there? She's applauding the Academy for overlooking the politics of her not doing the rounds.
Yeah, she basically didn't turn up at the BAFTAs. She didn't go to the SAG Awards. She didn't come here and be interviewed on Film Weekly, which, let me tell you, puts your Oscar in jeopardy.
We did try and torpedo her for that. We'll get her eventually.
No, she sort of stays in her hometown and does her internet show, her chat show. Right. So it's a very... I mean, look, the performance is extremely unaffected. When I first saw Precious, I never thought it was an Oscar-worthy film. But I did see that performance and I thought that was a terrific performance when I saw it at Cannes.
It's a tour de force, isn't it? And it's a tour de force that makes the film, because her big moment comes in the last 10 minutes of the film and it just lifts it to a different level.
Yeah, and that's what a supporting performance should do. Now, obviously, I've been stuck here in London, but I can now go live to Los Angeles to speak to someone who's been out and about in the city during the awards season and the awards ceremony. Covering the awards as showbiz correspondent for the E! News channel in South Africa is Nikki Greenwald. Welcome to Film Weekly, Nikki. Presumably you were out there supporting in Morgan Freeman in Invictus.
Yes, and obviously Matt Damon, who was nominated, and the film District 9, which was nominated in four categories, but as you probably know, sadly didn't walk away with any of them.
Was that big news in South Africa to have this little South African sci-fi film kind of put that up there in the major category, best picture it was nominated for?
Yes, it was huge, and not just, you know, the thing was there was a lot of contention as whether it was a South African film or not, because obviously it was American money, it was an American film in a sense that it was, you know, supported by Sony, and it wasn't really a South African film, even though it was shot in South Africa. It featured South African actors, and the director and the writer was South African.
It sounded pretty South African.
Yeah, it did showcase South Africa in a very good way, and it was a big surprise. It was also a surprise that the film did so well at the box office, so already people were very, very proud of that film. So I think, you know, as they say, just to be nominated, but it would be nice if it walked away with something.
What was the buzz like in Los Angeles, certainly for a small film like District 9? Did it have to fight for space, or do you think it was fairly well shared, the publicity between the 10 Best Picture nominees this year?
No, I think people were quite cynical in Los Angeles. You know, there's always, in the run-up to the Oscars, it's always quite contentious, and there's always a lot of mudslinging going on behind the scenes, especially, you know, between the studios. I think it was quite contentious, and everyone really knew that it would be between Avatar and The Hurt Locker in the end. You know, the big thing was that, you know, Avatar only walked away with three prizes, and really The Hurt Locker took home six, which was most of the big ones. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is from that. But certainly, you know, the buzz in Hollywood, you know, there was a lot of mudslinging going on and people talking about, you know, which film deserves to win and which doesn't. But I think the fact that all those films are nominated, those films will get seen and the effects will be felt throughout the world. So, you know, in the end, as long as people watch the movies, that's all that counts, really.
What about the buzz of the town? Forget the movies. In some way, they sort of play second fiddle to the buzz and the atmosphere that goes on, the opening of a Soho house, the opening of Elton John's party, the frocks and that whole hullabaloo side of it, without which the Oscars wouldn't be the Oscars.
It is very interesting when you're here and you realize, it's such a cliche, but you realize how much it is smoke and mirrors, that whole thing. And, you know, there is a lot of paparazzi running around, there's lots of screaming fans, there is all of that. But really, when you're standing in that environment, you realize that it is really a glorified, we would call it a matric dance. I think, I don't know if you guys refer to it as a prom or an end of year dance. It really is, it's a very choreographed
school disco, that's as glamorous as it gets in here.
Yeah, it's a bit like a school disco, you know. It's a very highly choreographed affair, and you really don't get a sense of it on television. It's very glossy, it's very glitzy, it's very edited, and in real life, it's kind of, I don't want to say a bit of a disappointment, but perhaps not as glossy and glamorous as it appears. And yes, it is all about that, and it's about making money, and it is a big advertising campaign for all the designers and all the makeup artists and makeup companies that sponsor these big red carpet events. And it's really, you do feel like you're in the center of a vortex where, you know, the entertainment industry, everything just comes together on this one night, and it is a bit surreal.
You're like a verbal makeup remover there, Nikki, stripping away the glamour for us. Did you actually meet anyone who was impossibly glamorous? They never are in real life, obviously, but did you meet a big star when you were out there?
Well, I must tell you that last night I was at Madonna's party for Raising Malawi. There was a photographic exhibition that we happened to get tickets to. I'm not quite sure how. And I was pushed out of the way by a bodyguard and was very upset by that, only to realize that the person standing behind said bodyguard was Madonna herself. So
wow.
That was kind of a strange
moment
for me.
She's little.
She's tiny, really, really, really tiny. And it was quite odd to see her there. But yeah, that was pretty much the one of the highlights of my life so far, I'd say.
Don't blame you. Getting nice. When you said Raising Malawi, I thought that was like a new film that she's directing. But of course, that's not. She's doing the story of Edward and Mrs.
Hopefully
Simpson.
Hopefully not.
No, exactly. Nikki Greenwald, thank you very much for taking us into the vortex of Oscar time. I'm sorry that Invictus didn't win. I'm sorry that District 9 didn't win. But there weren't many British winners either. In South Africa, you know, it was just good being there, Nikki Greenwald.
Exactly.
Thanks very much, Nikki. Zan, just a couple of things remain to be swept up, like the final dregs along the red carpet after the party has gone. Zan, we did our normal sweepstake. We're going to be finding out which of us kind of predicted the most awards. But the big surprises of the night, of which I don't think there were many, but yet again, foreign film has done it to us.
But this is almost becoming not a surprise now, isn't it? It's like you hand the Academy a couple of real classics that have cleaned up awards everywhere else in the world.
So you're talking about A Prophet
and The White Ribbon, which have basically been going head-to-head. One wins at one festival, the other matches it at another festival.
The White Ribbon won at Cannes, A Prophet won at London.
So surely it's between the two of them. And I thought The White Ribbon would do it, but typically, it seems, when faced with this, the Academy goes for a very different kind of film. Last year, instead of going for Waltz with Bashir or The Class, they went for a wry Japanese comedy called Departures. This year, they've gone for a very glossy looking, I haven't seen it, so it might be brilliant, but it looks like a slightly middling Argentinian drama called The Secret of Her Eyes.
It's the highest grossing film in Argentina since 1970, which suggests it's extremely popular. And from the clips that I saw previously on the internet, and here is that sort of burnished thing that the Academy really like, and
it's the Cinema Paradiso effect.
It is, and I went for it. I knew that it would that it would win. I mean, I love A Prophet. I love A White Ribbon. The White Ribbon, I think these are masterpieces that will be talked of in 20 years' time. Whereas I think we will have completely forgotten The Secret of Her Eyes. So I chose that, which kind of rescued me on my running total. So Zan, out of the 22 categories, how many did you get?
I fell down quite badly on things like the documentary shorts and the live action shorts and the animated shorts because of pure ignorance.
Yeah, me
it
too.
Was just
I haven't seen them.
Pinning a tail on a donkey in the dark room.
Sometimes you kind of scream ahead of me in those, but I got three wrong out of three.
I think I got me too.
Even though I realised that I'd seen one of those the animated.
Yeah, you shouted out in the middle of the
run. Well, I saw it on the right, and I didn't realise I'd seen it until the clip came. I said, I've seen that. It's really good. That actually would have chosen that had I known.
And that was the one that won.
It won the one.
You see,
I could have picked something up there. So in the end, all is said and done.
Okay, out of 22, I got 16.
Oh, Zan, I got 16 as well.
We're like Avatar and the Hurt Locker. We're going into the contest.
Yes.
We're neck and neck.
Gone for my gut feeling and gone Hurt Locker for Best Picture, I would have pipped you.
Yeah.
But no, not to be. I fired my agent. My thanks to Zan and to all my guests this evening. If you want to read much more and see much more, look at those frocks. penetrate the nitty-gritty of those awards, go to guardian.co.uk/film. Well, for now, I'd like to thank my mum, my dad, my brother, my dog, my producer of Film Wigby, Jason Phipps, my butcher, my baker, my candle.